I'm Lillian Vasquez, and this is Inland Edition. Later in the program, we'll share information about TruePublic, an opinion platform that allows anyone who downloads and uses the app to be counted or to contribute questions for others to answer. I'll talk with Kaban Clausen, the CEO and creator of this very unique platform. First, with over 2 million people within easy earshot of this radio station, most of whom would rather not drive to Orange County or Los Angeles to catch a flight, having the Ontario Airport in the middle of our region is a pretty handy thing. But passenger travel is way down. We'll start the program today with Alan Wapner, president of the Ontario International Airport Authority. Welcome, Alan.
Hi.
So I want to give an overall view. This show is kind of focused on COVID-19, but what's going on at our airport? What's changed at the airport and with the airlines with COVID-19?
Well, unfortunately, everything has changed. Certainly, passenger flights have gone down about 95%. And so we've seen airlines completely cease operations, and we've seen other lines curtail and cut a lot of flights. So on the passenger side, and it's not just us, it's every airport in the country. But because passengers are down, so is a lot of other revenue, like parking revenue, concessions, things like that. Fortunately, though, we're still extremely strong on the cargo side. We're the busiest cargo airport in the country for outgoing cargo with the hubs for both FedEx as well as for UPS.
Yeah, I read an article that you wrote. Talk a little bit about that. You talked about the Inland Empire is a national supply chain.
We've always been known for that because of our strategic location. You know, I have the three interstates. We have two railroads plus the airport. And I think it's a combination of what we've seen as a transition between brick and mortar and e-commerce. But especially now with the stay-at-home order, there's more people. In fact, you know, Amazon is hiring thousands of people. So because we have UPS and FedEx as well as DHL and Amazon, we're extremely busy. And so are our logistics centers and distribution centers. So that segment of the economy, at least here in our region, has really helped to balance what's going on at the airport.
What can you share about the overall industry pertaining to maybe the stimulus? I know that the airlines, there was some stimulus money that's in place. What are the attached requirements, or what can you share about that?
Well, we certainly know that the airlines have received a considerable amount of money. What they're doing with it, I'm not sure if they've even received it yet. Certainly, there's been money that has been committed to airports as well. We're slated to get about $22 million, but again, we haven't received the check. Unfortunately for Ontario Airport, the formula that the federal government used for disbursing the assistance for airports was not in our favor. Hmm. They used a formula that was based on passengers as well as, for some reason, debt service on bonds. And they used the numbers from passengers from 2 years ago. So certainly we've seen a tremendous amount of growth on passengers, up to 5.5 million. And fortunately for us, we haven't had to incur debt, but that means we were penalized when they gave out the money. Had they used cargo as an indicator, then we would have received more money. So I guess the answer to the question is it's still unknown how much of an impact that money is going to have. Even if the airlines receive the money, they're still not going to start operations again. So I suppose it's just going to help pay the debt that they have for the lack of the revenue.
Flights are still flying in and out of Ontario, I assume, but it's just at a much lesser amount of flights?
Very few flights are going. We lost all international service. We had daily nonstops to Taiwan. We were just about to begin direct service to Central America. And of course, we've always had service to Mexico. And all of our international service has just been completely eliminated. All of the airlines have cut back tremendously. Literally, they're flying some flights with no passengers, and they're only flying it because of the cargo in the belly. So on the passenger side, you know, it's extremely bad. And the problem we're going to have, even if the stay-at-home order ended today, it's still going to take quite a bit of time to ramp up airline operations again. Unlike 9/11, where all the planes were just parked wherever they were at the time we shut down aviation, now all of the planes have been parked at remote locations, and it's going to take a lot of time for the airlines to make sure all the planes are up to standards mechanically and to call back all the crews and pilots. So even when we're ready to start, you're not going to see a huge change for quite a while.
Just with that in mind, when this stay-at-home, stay-in-place starts to lift, what's in place? Who's making the plans of how to get the flight industry going again?
A lot's dependent on the president. You know, he shut down international flights completely and immigration, and then it goes to the state and finally the county. But when it comes to airports, it's really controlled by the federal government. Certainly, I don't think there would be anything stopping us from growing domestically again other than the economics. And I would expect that the airlines would start opening up their flights again at the larger airports and then eventually get back to Ontario. And it's extremely frustrating because, as you and your listeners know, we fought very hard to get local control of the airport. We've been able to over double the amount of traffic going out of our airport, and now we basically have to start all over again.
Yeah, what a shame. I call it our Ontario airport because I'm so proud to have one in our region. The businesses inside the airports shut down, closed, nothing's going on there either?
Well, as far as internal operations, I'd say pretty much. There might be one or two restaurants that are still open with reduced hours. The parking lot's open, but there's no one using it. We've cut back a lot of staffing. So the airport's still operational. We still have both terminals operating. It's empty. If you go in there, it's empty. But I don't think it's unlike any other airport. Just prior to the stay-at-home order, I was doing some traveling, and I was in Atlanta, which is the largest airport in the country, and it was empty at that time, and that was 2 months ago. It's just part of the industry right now.
You don't have any plans of a ramp-up? Are those in place? Are you guys working on that now?
They just started working on it. One thing I did tell them is if they do any reduction in staffing, I said, don't touch marketing. And you know this, Lily. When the recession hit, the first ones they wanted to get rid of was economic development and marketing. I said, that's the worst thing. Because that's what we need when things are down, is we need people trying to bring in new business and retain the business that we have. So that's what I told them. Right now, again, they're trying to reduce the expenses, some of the logistical. I mean, this happened at a really bad time. There's never a good time for a pandemic.
Time, right?
But, budgets are due now. And so the question is, do they continue with the budget as they had it and we make reductions later? I've given them the authorization to not even have a budget July 1. There's nothing that requires us to do it. And I told them, look, if you need a month or two, I'd rather have a more realistic budget than one that isn't. That way you have better time to really project out what we're going to have. So I'm not sure what staff's going to do with the budget, but certainly there's going to. And again, I serve in all the transportation boards, whether it's Omnitrans, Metrolink, the airport, and we're all suffering. I mean, Omnitrans is down 85%, Metrolink well over 50%. We're not charging fares anymore on Omnitrans, and we're cut back a lot of service. So we really have to think about, how we're going to come out of this, whether we're going to phase out. We don't know. This is something that no one has ever faced before.
Right. So it's hard to tell what our new normal is going to be.
Exactly. And, you could reopen everything today. It doesn't mean people, it's like they got the checks from the government. They got no place to spend the money. So even with all the economic stimulus they want, until the stores are up and running, and especially small businesses have been hurt greatly, it's going to be tough. The other thing that I'm really worried about, the city owns the arena and the convention center as well as the airport, is that it takes at least a year to 2 years to book concerts and conventions. And with the convention center and arena shut down, all the hotels are out of business. They have zero occupancy. So that segment is going to take quite a while to start up again, only because of the time delay in actually scheduling and booking concerts and conventions and things. So that really worries me because, the domino effect of that is once you lose that, then you lose your hotels, you lose the bed tax, you lose your sales tax. Parking taxes are a big source of revenue, and with the airport where it is, there are no parking taxes. So it's not going to be an on-off switch. It's going to take a while to have it moving again.
Wow. When you talk about, it's going to take a while to get it going full flight, You talking months, years? What are you talking?
Well, you know, it really depends. And what we're seeing, if you look around, is there are some that believe that increasing the economy is more important than being conservative when it comes to health risk. And it's really being left up to the counties. In our county, I'm understanding that they may be ready to start releasing some recreational areas similar to what they've done in Ventura County, but I don't expect them to start allowing operations at any large venues, large gatherings, things like that. But it's beyond our control. As far as the airport specific, it's really being driven more by the market than it is by any regulations or executive orders. It's going to be market driven according to what the airlines want to do, depending on what they think and they raise revenue on.
And do you know, or can you comment on the fact of any employees that work in this industry, specifically out of Ontario, that have been diagnosed with COVID-19 or had any issues with that in this industry in our backyard?
They really don't give us specific information because of privacy. They don't want to give us that. We've been aware of some TSA employees that have had confirmed cases. Don't think they've been hospitalized. Other than that, I haven't really received any specific information for the airport. Certainly, we get it for the city as a whole and as a county, but specific at the airport, I haven't heard anything.
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Alan Wapner. He's the president of the Ontario International Airport Authority. Alan, obviously, with less planes in flight, it would seem obvious that our air quality has probably improved in this region. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I was in a meeting yesterday, a regional meeting of transportation, and that was brought up with the fact that over 50% decrease in vehicle traffic on the highways has certainly contributed to an increase in air quality. But having said that, I believe it's only 1% of all environmental pollution is caused by passenger vehicles. As far as the passenger flights and the various kinds of flights, you know, I'm not a scientist. I could only think that because of the decreasing amount of flights that there would be a decrease in pollution. Although, you know, we have increased in cargo flights, but not nearly as many flights that are grounded for passengers.
So what's your takeaway with our Ontario airport? What do you want our listeners to know?
Basically, what we're looking for is twofold. One, we had to react immediately to the decrease in business. We had to make sure that we found a way to either increase revenue or decrease expenses best that we could. And that's certainly what staff is working on. I'm pretty sure that the $22 million we're getting from the federal government will help fill the gap and the deficit for the remainder of this fiscal year. But we don't know how long this is going to go on for. So I'm looking for a budget that will continue with the reduction in expenses for next year. At the same time, I've asked not only my airport, but the City of Ontario and other agencies that I serve on boards to already start looking at how we're going to ramp up again once we can do that. I don't want to wait. I want that to be ready to move as soon as we can. So I have the staff at the airport working both ways, how to solve the short-term gap and deficit, as well as how we start ramping up again once we can.
Alan, thanks so much for your time and your knowledge and information about our Ontario airport. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Alan Wapner is president of the Ontario International Airport Authority. You'll find links to information for the Ontario International Airport Authority online at flyontario.com. Just type authority in the search box on the airport homepage, or click the Airport Authority link at the bottom of the website. Again, that's flyontario.com. After my break, my conversation with Caven Clausen, CEO of True Public. True Public is an anonymous opinion platform. All you have to do to use it is download their app or go directly to their website. Please stay with us. I'm Lillian Vasquez, and you're listening to Inland Edition from Empire KVCR News. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Inland Edition from Empire KVCR News. I'm Lillian Vasquez. So I don't use as many apps as some people, but there is one I've been having fun with lately. So I went right to the source to find out what it's all about. My guest is Caven Clausen. He is the CEO of True Public. True Public is an opinion platform that takes surveys on a number of topics. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Give us an overview of what TruePublic is.
TruePublic, you know, really came out of the idea that we needed a new way to understand public opinion. A lot of the methodologies that have worked so well for so long, things like telephone polls, still have some effectiveness today, Lillian, but they're diminishing, and especially when it comes to this younger generation. The inspiration was really out of the 2016 election, where we saw the impact of data, and as two campaigns had different data sets and they were using that information to make decisions, there's a certain reality we wanted people to get. So we gave them a place, the TruePublic mobile app and website, where they're totally anonymous. They give some basic demographics, and they get to share their opinion on a number of different things. And the incentive is to see how you compare. And that comparison, I think, is a pretty powerful human emotion we all have. And I think especially with the younger set, 16 to 35-year-olds, it's really working in a phenomenal way. Interesting thing about TruePublic is 99% plus of our questions are created by our community. Every single day, we have thousands and some days tens of thousands of questions submitted to us. And we have a team of moderators all across the country and the world who take the time to make sure our questions aren't biased, they're not leading, that they're fun, that they're interesting, which is actually, you know, quite a challenge, really, to have really well thought through questions.
I want to talk about COVID-19 and specifically to California. There was one survey. It says, when do you think your state governor should open up businesses in your state in light of coronavirus? And at this particular point, there were 5,346 in the survey. It may have changed since this. Do you have those numbers in front of you? Can you share that?
What we're doing is we're asking this question on a rolling basis. So the numbers are always changing. When should the state open up? The options were mid-May, mid-June, mid-July, or August, mid-August or later. California is one of the states that wants to open the latest of all the states we're looking at. As you can imagine, southern states like Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas are some of the ones that want to open the fastest. Idaho is another one. Only 26% of Californians want to open up in mid-May, the earliest option we had. Another 27 say mid-June. And just to clarify this question, what we're saying is not opening everything. It's more, when should you begin to open up? Another 22% mid-July, and then a full quarter of Californians say you should be waiting at least until August, if not later, to open up. Yeah, I think California is now the fifth in states that want to wait the longest to open up. I will say the political divide is strong in this one. The states that are more conservative in how they vote are certainly wanting to open up faster than other states, with the exception of a few areas. That data has been really interesting to watch, and we're constantly going to be tracking that, because one of the things we've noticed with our COVID data is things are constantly in flux. When this lockdown first happened, Lillian, the interesting thing among relationships was relationships between married couples and couples that were living together actually improved at first. Can you believe it? They got better. We assumed that there might have been some excitement about being locked down initially. And then over the following 3 weeks, relationship happiness deteriorated, because we're asking these same questions on a weekly basis of people across the country. And why were the relationships deteriorating, not just in California, but across the country, was being trapped together so closely with another person. Those small things that were once small things, whether it was the dishes or how you distribute time, suddenly became big things.
Yeah.
And especially in places like New York, the data was the worst in New York. Nearly half of all relationships in New York said they were developing severe strains in their relationship, which was almost 20% higher than any other place in the country, which we imagine had a lot to do with it being the epicenter, and probably also a lot to do with the small living quarters.
Right. I would think so. Yeah, well, California is a little spread out and the homes are bigger. New York, they're
certainly
pretty small, living in apartments for the most part. When you're talking California, can you drill down to a region, or is it California overall? Because California is a really big state.
We're starting to be able to drill down to regions more. For this particular study, we did the whole state.
Okay.
If we wanted to drill down more, we need to spread it out. Because from a sample sizing, we need to feel confident. Like if we have 5,000 people across the whole state, that's great. From a statistical modeling standpoint, they're distributed randomly all the way from the north to the south. But you're right. California might as well be politically, culturally, even in LA County, there's areas that are completely different. So unfortunately for this one, we haven't drilled down. But as we're growing this thing, we're going to be able to do that more and more over time.
All right. What other details did you find in the study as it relates to California?
Californians are doing better than the rest of the country in one positive sign. Drinking, as you can imagine, is up across all of America. 27% of people admit to drinking more. 7% are admitting to drinking significantly more. California, of every state in the country, is doing the best of every place, save Hawaii, in this category of not increasing their alcohol consumption. That is, why is that? That's a good question, but it is a positive and interesting sign that Californians, maybe it is the thing you just mentioned, the having more living space that's causing a little less stress than other places. Maybe it's the better weather. There's a lot of theories around why that would be, but I think it's a very positive sign. Also, California is the highest in another interesting category. Great question we asked was, we're trying to find the positive sign of COVID at times, and not just
good.
The negative.
Good.
And one of the things we asked was, is there a hobby or interest that you had for a long time that you have picked up and started to do since lockdown? California is number one in the country with that. 63% of Californians have started a hobby or an interest, the most common ones being cooking. People have been doing things like woodworking, building things.
Gardening?
Those things that people have never, maybe they wanted to do them for years, but they were always too busy. And now for the first time, 63% of people in California are able to do those things they're really interested in.
I have some other statistics in front of me regarding California and COVID-19. 73% suggested that that should be the biggest factor in reopening. 23% saying the economy should be the key factor. And 29% of Americans refuse to wear masks when leaving home. Now, I'm thinking that at some point when you're asking the question, as opposed to, just like you were saying, people living together, at one point it was one answer, but 5 weeks later, it's kind of a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have new information on when reopening, key factors, or wearing the masks at this point?
Yeah, the views on masks have almost flipped. Not surprising. I think some of the health organizations around the world have flipped their views on wearing masks. Masks are now way higher, like in value for people in a big way. I think the most interesting one is how quickly people are feeling like they can go back to certain places. When we first asked questions about, and this is even in California specifically, when do you feel comfortable going back to a gym, to a sporting event, going on a domestic flight? The numbers were incredibly high. For each of those, it was 37% needed a vaccine to go back to the gym, 47% needed a vaccine to go back to a sporting event, and exactly that same number needed a vaccine to get on a domestic flight. Now, as we've been locked down longer, and as we're getting closer to hopefully being let out, those numbers are already starting to go down as people, I think, are realizing, okay, I do want to get back out into the world, as opposed to weeks ago when it was more intense. One thing that I think could be very interesting for California in general, the difference in safety and how people view domestic versus international travel. The ideal trip for most young Americans, according to TruePublic, before COVID was the Caribbean or Europe, and in some cases, Asia. Not as much excitement about domestic travel, but that's really flipped. I think what's going to happen is this could be a real boom for places like Miami, for Las Vegas, for Los Angeles, for parts of California that attract tourists, as the fear of flying internationally is such an increase that really surprised us and surprised our research team on how many people across America were just completely unwilling to do that in comparison to taking a domestic flight, which they feel is much safer.
You're on it less. You maybe don't want to go into the other country. Maybe you're feeling safer right here at home.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Okay. My guest has been Kevin Claussen. He is the CEO of TruePublic. TruePublic is an opinion platform that takes surveys on a number of topics. Kevin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
TruePublic is online at truepublic.com or download the app from the App Store or Google Play. To hear this episode and future shows, visit our website at kvcinews.org/inlandedition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on Apple Play, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Inland Edition on your streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of Empire KVCI News. Rick Dulock writes and produces the program. David Fleming provides final edits and assembles the show. Shireen Awad provides production support. Greg Myers keeps us organized. And Michael Sanchez is our sound engineer. I'm your host, Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.